In this week, on the 23rd of February, North London got its asses handed to them. In 1991, playing with pace and power, the Dons put five past an expensively assembled Spurs team. In 1997, on the 23rd of Feb, a well-taken goal by Vinnie Jones midway through the first half left us 12 points behind leaders Man United with three games in hand. We're just a team that likes to take it to people from the north, like we did on Saturday. We're the same old Wombles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth. If we win or we lose, we just go.
Hello, hello, dear listener, and welcome to the show. I'm Matt Cooper, and today I'm joined by Mor Frere, the CEO of Fair Game. Niall Cooper, how you doing, Niall?
Yeah, I'm in a world of delirium. You've just mentioned arguably my most favourite memory of Plough Lane, that wonderful 5-1 victory over Spurs, for which I can live on for eternity. It was glorious, wonderful, brilliant.
Yes, listener, go back and check it on YouTube. It was fantastic. Our man with the buttons, Dr. Adam Proctor. How are you, Adam? How you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah. Was it that game wasn't the one time when we were like playing Spurs every other week, was it? There was one season where we were playing them all
no.
the time.
that was the 97 season.
Yeah,
we lost most of those games.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
We drew a lot of them, Mark.
We did win. We used to regularly beat Spurs. That was our thing.
Yeah,
anyhow,
that's what I like.
But in addition to the same old Wombles crew, we are joined not just by one, but by two special guests. I miss Mark. I can't even believe. Do you know what that was, Mark? I'm so sorry, mate. It's flipping Adam and Niall waffling on, and of course. I have to say, we've got our man with all the stat knowledge, the footballing guru himself, Mr. Tall Mark Lewis. Apologies, my friend.
Yeah. Good evening, everybody.
How you doing, mate?
I'm all right, actually. If I'm allowed to, I will tell you about my trip to South Wales later on, because I did go to South Wales. Very interesting.
As long as you don't mention the C word.
Okay, I'll just talk about South Wales as opposed
yeah,
to
you can't
the capital
the
of
yeah.
the actual country.
Yeah, exactly. That's the rules. Them's the rules.
Thank
Anyhow, as I was saying before I
messed it up.
Myself, I'm just excited. That's what it is. I'm excited because we've got two special guests. Not one, but two special guests. Two DTB board members. Our first time on the podcast. A big welcome to James Ledward. James, how are you?
Yes, doing great. Thank you. Good to be here. And thank you for having me.
You are more than welcome. And I'm just going to say a regular guest. Oh, the Cyber Bubbles podcast. The chair of the DTB, Mr. Angus Fox. Hello, Angus. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me again. It's always fun to come on.
You are welcome. Yeah, but it's always a shambles, and that's the way that we like to.
Has
we like to run
been
our
on
podcast
as, often as a guest than Angus. I mean, he just invites himself on, which is fine.
That's an excellent question. Anyhow,
Third
guys, we've
lucky.
Got. We have got some. We've obviously got a lot of questions for you both. It's been an exciting time for at the DTB. Lots of things happening. But before we get into that, I think we have to talk about what could possibly be the most complete performance of the season. Mark, would you agree with that?
Well, definitely of this season, possibly
yeah.
of a
this
number
season,
of seasons.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
I mean, I've heard people referencing the Oxford game, which is so long ago that Jack Redoni was playing for us, as the last time that we'd played that well and against a decent team and you know, really been
I've got to nick one stat off Mark before he goes it, because I've just seen one stat that has just blown my mind, right? Nathan Bishop did not touch the ball in the first half.
Wow. I did not realise that.
Man.
I didn't realise that one. Didn't have that one up my sleeve.
God, I didn't realise that at all, but you're right. I mean, I was looking at it. I think you all know, as football fans, we all get slightly superstitious and nervous. And there was a point towards the end of the first half, I wanted to turn to Niall and say, I don't think Bishop's had to make a save. excuse me, but the truth is he didn't have to touch the ball. It's incredible.
It was. They had no shots, no nothing. We were that first half. I mean, the second half was good, but the first half, honestly, that was just brilliant. I just thought we were absolutely dominating. It was what, you know, JJ said it afterwards. It felt like it was the most complete performance. We were pressuring. We were full of energy. It's everything you wanted out of a Wimbledon team. You know, that energy, that commitment. It was glorious. I mean, you know, and frankly, I've got to thank the DTB, who obviously make all the football decisions, as me and Mark know from our time on there.
It's been
their
tactics
that fed down to the team, and then they've delivered massively. So huge credit to the DTB on their team selection and tactics. Because, you know, me and Mark got all the stick when we were losing. So clearly it's the DTB that always does this. So James and Angus, great choices on your selection, great team talks and great tactics. Well done.
We'll take it. Yeah, it was the best game I've seen at Plough Lane, actually, in the modern era since we've been back. So
I've got to hold my hands up. I wasn't there and I'm absolutely furious.
Oh, no.
I was not there. Like and I'm genuinely worried that I now can't go back to Plough Lane because I wasn't at the Reading game either.
Oh,
so
James.
I think I officially could be accursed and I'm now scared to come back.
Well,
I just want to
take that away from you because I think that the person who has been there for both those games is James Tilley. And my sense is that is possibly the difference because, you know, our performances over the last few weeks...
Are you trying to say that one of the players on the pitch who's completely transformed one side of the pitch and scored one of the goals is more responsible for our current form than James Ledward not being there? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah.
I think that's really debatable.
Yeah, or the shoes or socks that I wear to the game. Yeah, I think...
I'm just looking at the fixture list and trying to choose a game that possibly we don't expect to win at all anyway. So, James, if you want to go to Stockport away on the 28th of March or Lincoln away on the 3rd of April, both of which I think will be quite tough, possibly, apart from Stockport home, our toughest games the rest of the season, then
Orient away. So that obviously was a great result. Mm. So you're not
a Jonah. That's all right.
Yeah, I think maybe I've got away luck, but not the home luck. If I look at the games I went to and the scores that we saw from kind of
within your
13 game group at Doncaster,
away and Lincoln away.
James, I think you're going to be fine. You know, it's going to be up and down this season, but the last few games, I don't know what's been said or what's happened in terms of tactics, but we've been so on the front foot. The game against Reading and the game against Bradford, it was just all over the place. I think it was so difficult to pick a man of the match. It was interesting because I know that
Smith
got it. He was man of the match. But, you know, I looked at Tilley was running all over the place. It was terrifying people down that side of the pitch. And Marcus Brown has just... turned into the player that everyone told us he was. He's just been phenomenal.
He was on fire.
Well, I would have to say, in terms of tactics, that whoever has, between them, from a coaching point of view, managed to convince Brown he is a centre-forward, and therefore he can play like a centre-forward. So therefore, for example, he can look for the ball from a quick long throw on the halfway line, as he did, and then when he's bearing down on goal, normally you'd think, I want Matty Stevens there because Matty Stevens is your culture finisher. But actually, Brown didn't look like he was going to miss. And he didn't. And that, I think, from, you know, just before half-time, 2-0, it's easy to say now, but actually, in hindsight, that was probably game over there and then.
Oh, come on. I would like to know, honestly, and Angus, you could jump in here, when they scored their one to make it 3-1, did you think we're going to draw this match?
No, I didn't. I thought we had it. I was disappointed, but inevitably the whole of our league is quality opposition. They're always going to be able to get a goal. But I didn't think at any point we were going to lose the game. I also thought the fans were immense on Saturday. I mean, it was just fantastic. The whole place was buzzing. Was talking about the game and everyone was buoyed up because it was late starting. And maybe they'd had an extra an extra libation before the start of the game. And
there's
you
no
know,
truth
that
in the
was
rumour that that the Doncaster board gave the coach driver the wrong directions. Bradford.
Of course not. No, we don't get involved in that. But it's yeah, it's unfortunate that they were. I mean, you know, I guess as an amateur looking at that from the outside, because I don't have any idea of how those logistics work, you just think it must have put them off.
I
can't believe the planning for that. I mean, like, there's an England game, Twickenham, and Chelsea are at home. What possibly makes you think it's sensible to stay in a hotel in Chelsea? I mean, it's just like, whatever. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Who do they think they are?
What kind of budget have they got to afford
in hotels in
Chelsea?
Exactly. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Anyway, whatever.
Am I allowed to talk about South Wales?
Are we going to come on to South Wales at the moment? I'm just still eulogising about
not.
The...
You can talk about Matt Stevens scoring a goal and then you can end it.
Well, the other thing I do want to talk about is the 30-minute delay was so funny. Of course, the rumours on all the chats was it's going to kick off at 4:30 and I was spitting tacks because I had replacement buses. So I was like, no, this is going to be a nightmare. But thankfully, it wasn't that late. So I'm hoping someone sped them up to get... I was saying make them get change on the coach, you know. But obviously, they're professionals, so they wouldn't do that. But then also the... I definitely had an extra beer. I definitely bought more food than I normally would because we were waiting around. And it was a there was loads.
Are
of
you
food.
Trying to say, Adam, it was a cunning DTB conspiracy?
Well,
so that we all spent half an hour worth more of drinking. I spent more, much more than I normally did as well.
Yeah, well, there was loads of food. Yeah. There was loads. There seemed to be lots more food trucks this time than I'd seen before together, which was really good.
See, the donut truck was a definite inspiration.
I saw that. I didn't try it, but I saw it opposite the kiosk. It was calling me, but I felt I can't do that.
I fell for that. And me and Matt were like, they've got donuts.
Tea and donuts.
No, Evie was like straight for donuts.
That's really
donuts.
Good. I think I still go with you need to get Humble Crumble in, the Apple Crumble people from Centre Town. Then my world will be happy. And I'm always going to be campaigning for that. So this is my... You've got board meeting. It starts, for those who don't know, they've got board meeting in an hour and a half. I believe you have to move the agenda around. And I want a motion in that you must get Humble Crumble in to the ground. That's it. I'm happy.
It's amazing.
DGB, don't get involved with. I think the food trucks is probably one of them.
I was saying, I'm going to offer a deal here. If you do that, I will support 50+1 in the vote.
Oh,
wow. My word.
Wow.
That's really
fighting
tempting.
Talk. Fighting
that is...
talk from Niall.
Yeah,
wow.
That is amazing.
Well,
so basically, all of Niall's principles come down to can you get Apple Crumble at the ground? That's amazing.
It's all about the fan experience, Matt. It's all about the fan experience.
Yeah, it's all about the Niall fan experience. Anyhow, it was an amazing game. Great goals all round. Obviously it was a cross, but you're taught to put that ball into that area, the area of uncertainty. Where the keeper doesn't know whether to come or not, and then it ends in the back of the net. We've seen them going. That's fantastic. Brown's goal, as you say, Hippolyte was on it, just like the ball's gone out.
Yeah.
He takes the moment, just throws it. Fantastic. Then we have
that second goal was great because it was they made a complete error and kicked it off, and it was just the speed of the throw and whatever. But it was just, yeah, when there's an error made and you get an advantage like that, it's amazing to actually put it away. I was like, yes, they made a mistake and we took massive advantage of it.
It was fantastic.
They were annoyed too. They were annoyed with themselves at that point, and that's always a brilliant opportunity.
Yeah, it was brilliant. And then obviously, Matty Stevens has a goal ruled out. I mean,
that
it's difficult. We, have, we didn't see, I haven't seen
you
all the angles,
further down,
but
Mark.
It looks
what do you, what...
incredibly close. Incredibly close.
Yeah,
to
I wasn't quite far enough across. But what I can say is that Stevens moved past two defenders before he put his flag up, which to me indicates he wasn't offside. But I'm in no way any kind
I
of match official. I'm just a biased
offside.
Wimbledon fan. So.
Anyhow, but he did then
you're
score
not
biased. A very
you're not biased
cute
Wimbledon
goal.
Fan. You're just a person with logic. And we know how this works. As a Wimbledon fan, every goal for us, whether whatever, is definitely a goal. I mean, I remember the non-handball from the other year that definitely wasn't a handball. All those sort of things.
Oh, yeah.
Those
against
sort of
Chile.
That's the way it works.
Yeah,
we had a big argument about that. That definitely was handball, but it was allowed, so who cares?
But and then Stephen scores. I thought a very cute back heel goal. That was gorgeous. I thought that was absolutely fantastic. Ball's fallen to him. And actually, it's quite interesting. It is post-match, he talked to the BBC, and he was sort of saying it was a scramble in the box, and I just did what I did, put it in. I mean, it was more than that. It was just gorgeous little flick in. It was really lovely. Go back and watch the extended highlights, because they at least they give a replay of each goal. It was fantastic.
I've got to say, on that Matty Stevens goal, that was just proper rude. That's all I'm saying. I thought it was just quality. When we were there, right, we could see it right on top of it, and
it was cheeky.
There's nothing like a little deaf back heel. I mean, admittedly, it's not far out, but it's rude, and I thought it was ace. It's absolutely brilliant. That kind of finish in that kind of game, in that kind of atmosphere, just made it brilliant. So Matty Stevens, obviously, he is our one listener today, because the other two people who rotate their listenership are on the programme. So Matty Stevens, well done, mate. I loved it. It was rude. It was ace. It was brilliant.
I've got to ask, guys, Angus, when, we have a... So obviously you've got the half an hour delay at the start of the game, and then you have the fabulous result. Do you think there was a sort of like a financial benefit to that? Obviously, at the start of the game, more people are drinking or eating than before. And then when we get a win like that, do you see more people hanging around afterwards? Are they more people in the shop, more people having a drink?
I went up to the 1889 afterwards. It was packed. So definitely. I don't have the numbers. Nobody's communicated that to us yet. But I would imagine that we did very well on Saturday because of that.
Yeah. Okay.
It does make a huge difference, though. Like, just the feeling of, I want to stick around, even if it's for one, versus, we've just conceded whatever it was in the Doncaster game, a late loser. You're not in the mood, right? Yeah. And I personally feel it at the games I've been around, that people do stick around and it builds up the atmosphere. If there's a 5:30 kickoff, it's great that the club's showing that as well. So it is all connected for sure. But like Angus says, we don't know the actual detail of the numbers.
Yeah, well, I've made a couple of times, because I like going to the 1889 lounge, but a couple of times I have left when we've lost. And been, so for now, a couple of times if Martin's up for staying, I've said before the game, I will definitely have one beer afterwards, because I know that if I don't say that, I will be just off in a huff. So we kind of commit ourselves, because, But Saturday was... I didn't stay because I was with my youngest daughter and we had replacement buses, etc. So I was a bit worried about that. Before the game, it was packed as well. Like, it was rammed down by the pub and all the food places. So I think people got there... I was a bit later than normal, but I think people were in. And then they found out it was going to be delayed and they're stuck, which is good.
I have to be honest, it's obvious, isn't it, that, a win is always going to benefit the bar takings after the game and the club shop. I mean, it's, I think JJ just needs to get that message across, really, that we just have to win all of our home games. That's clear, but it's quite good that the slight delay might have made a bit more money for the club as well.
Do you want a quick stat on the home and away stuff?
Come on, my friend, chuck it in.
So until a few weeks back, it was like, we couldn't buy a goal at home or anything else. And understandably, when the information went out about season tickets at the recent meeting, then it's like, our former home has been crap. However, currently we have played 17 games away, 6 wins, 3 draws, 8 defeats, 23 goals scored, 33 away, which obviously is punctuated by the losses at Peterborough and Cardiff, respectively. But the home form, with obviously the recent wins, certainly augmenting that. 15 games at home. We've got a number of home games coming up. 15 at home, 6 home wins, 3 draws, 6 defeats. So actually, as many wins at home as away. And we've scored 16 goals at home in 15 games, which isn't amazing, but we've only conceded 13 goals at home in 15 games, which is pretty productive.
Yeah.
And therefore, actually, identical points records, 21 points at home, 21 points away.
Yeah.
Well,
meaning we're about to embark on a 10-match winning run and make the playoffs. That's all new.
Yeah.
Well, I got some other stats about blocks of games, but I'll throw them in later once you've actually quizzed our DTB people.
Yeah. Well, that's a good segue, because I was going into that now. And
look at that. Let me talk about Cardiff once. Yeah.
Oh, for God's sake.
You mentioned the C word.
You know the punishment if you mention the C word. You know, it's just, you can't do that, Mark. So, all right, okay, come on, my friend. I mean, I guess we have to reflect on it, don't we? We at the same moment, we only like to talk about positive results.
You just said a nice segue, DTB. Yeah. If he wants to talk about the C word, he can offline later on, whatever. I'm not.
I'll come back to talk about South Wales. Carry on with
DTB
stuff.
In Wales, move on. Right, DTB people, let's quiz them.
Oh, dear me. Well, first of all, a big welcome again to James and Angus. Thank you for your time. I know that there's a lot happening around the club at the moment. And as Niall alluded to earlier, you've got a DTB meeting this evening. We're recording on a Monday, so... And I'm sure that's just one of maybe a couple that might be happening this week. But as this is James' first time on the pod, I think it was just a little bit of a, you know, some little quick fire questions just to get you in the spirit, introduce you to our listenership of one or two.
Okay, let's go for it.
So, James, I think the first thing is how and when did you start following the Dons?
So, I think I was very honest about this when I was obviously looking to get involved with the DTB back in August when I applied for the co-option role, and obviously then through the elections. I am a very, very new Wimbledon fan. My first game was actually the Ipswich Cup game in 2024. So I was in the area. I was like, oh, hang on a minute. Wimbledon are just up the road. They're playing Ipswich. Should be a good game. Why don't we go along? And then it was a love story from then on, really.
And what was it? Can I ask that? What is it attracted you to Wimbledon? Was it the locality, the community aspect of it? Was there anything particular that you thought, or was it the fact that we beat?
Such a loaded question, James. You have to remember what podcast you're listening to, and there is one very seriously correct answer to this. But like, go for it.
So it was a combination of the locality, the community feel. Walking into Plough Lane for the first time, I know that. I mean, it's just incredible. I've brought other family to games since then. I won't name the team that they follow that are in similar leagues, but they said, "This is incredible. How is this the stadium that a League One football club plays in?" That says it all. You bring someone new into the stadium, and they say that. One of the first things they say, and they say, if you go to some away games, you're going to have a shock of your life. No disrespect to any away teams, of course, but it just shows how brilliant Plough Lane is and how brilliant what we have is.
Yeah, and it is. And then, so from that, you know, you obviously quickly found out about our story, what's going on. You found out how we're run, and then the election start. And what makes you think, oh no, I'll put my name in the hat.
It's a good question. I reflect on that every now and then. I think obviously the initial way I got involved was that co-option back in August through to December. And it was a really difficult decision as to whether to run for election, right? So I had a very open conversation with Angus, with other members on the board. And I said, I've been doing this for about 3 weeks by the time I have to decide whether to run in an election or not, which could commit me for up to 3 years to something I've been doing for 3 weeks. And I didn't want to be the person that potentially got elected. And then a year down the line went, I've bitten off more than I can chew. It's not fair on the fans to resign a year down the line into a 2 or 3 year term. It's not fair on the club or anyone. But I just had this feeling. I was kind of, I've been doing it 3 weeks and I'm loving it. And what I feel I can add and could achieve through kind of 2 more years or 3 more years, I just had that feeling and I couldn't resist throwing my hat into the ring. And it was a very difficult decision as a new member and still, I mean, I'm still in the learning phase, right? But at that time I was like learning by the minute. I don't regret it, just to be clear.
Yeah. No, I was gonna ask that sort of follow on thing. So like how have you found it?
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's been a steep learning curve. It's been great having the experience of the other members of the DTB. Obviously I'm heavily involved with the kind of constitution governance stuff. So the experience that come with some of our really, really knowledgeable and experienced members who aren't on the board or but have been in the past or have been heavily involved. So it's just been a brilliant learning curve and so much to do and so much to add, I think.
Yep, I mean these are very interesting and exciting times
Yes.
for the DTB and for the club in general.
I've got to ask a bunch of questions about this,
We've
quite
got
really.
yeah, well, there's a whole lot of things. I mean, and obviously today we've noticed that the a first survey's gone out, a DTB survey's gone out, and it basically seems to be asking people if they want to be if they would like to buy a bond, if they would like, you know, a bond round three. So those questions have gone out. I had a look through that. It seems to be quite a simple survey. Would you like to buy a bond? It's quite a good thing. I'm assuming there's other things that are out and about as well. Niall, I'll come to you first if you've got some questions.
Yes, so for me, I mean, it's still the constitutional stuff. So I know James is surrounded by a couple of people on the board for which are friends of this pod from times in past and now, obviously, that are very into the constitutional element. I've got a question about it. It's about 50 plus one, and it's about the guarantees that we have on 50 plus one. As you know, the regular listener to this podcast will know I'm the naysayer. So I'm interested about how you persuade me that it doesn't undermine the fan ownership element. I have been concerned and still am about going under 75% because of the 25%, the ability of that blocking ability from the other people on that. So I'm very interested to know how that's going to come about. I have said to Angus, among others, that I'm definitely going to be, I will vote. And I think that's actually beneficial to whatever happens. I think people need to vote and need to participate. I think that's absolutely essential. But James, persuade me why 50 plus one is a legitimate option and try and ease some of my concerns about the future of the club that I fundamentally believe thrives because of our fan-owned reputation and model. Angus might well help you out here at some points, I suspect. But and equally, I realise I'm the only one here who's actually probably, you know, more concerned. But I'd be interested, James, from a from that constitutional side and in layman's terms. And I say that because I know one of the other people on the podcast who goes by the name of, you know, I won't even mention it. But anyway, we mentioned earlier on that he was connected to the bridesmaid of my wife, that particular person who's sometimes not capable of putting these things in simple terms. So it might be interesting, James, if you could try and explain it in some simple terms. And mine, I do love you, by the way. Matt, you're on mute.
Yeah, like the incredible simple questions you just asked now. I mean,
Yeah, I'm just trying to
I'm
filter
not sure
through
how long that
exactly
question
what.
lasted, Niall. A good 5 minutes. Mate, persuade Niall that 50 plus one is all right.
Okay.
Easy.
Yeah, let's see if I can do that in 30 seconds. So look, I understand why people would have the reservations they do. It's a massive issue for this club. I do appreciate. I think the way I look at it, and if I think about what I said during the elections, in the hustings, I said I support 50 plus one, but I don't support it for the sake of I support it for the right investment. And that is what is going to be critical. So I don't support the concept of 50 plus one if it means we sell 3% there, 4% there, and that is, in my view, kicking the can down the road. I support it for bringing in, if it brings in the right investor who can commit both working capital but also to the overall improvement of the club. If that can mean increasing the size of the stadium as we need to. Look, we're seeing brilliant sellouts at games now. I think we could sell more tickets. So if bringing in that investor means we can increase capacity by 1,000, I'm not saying all of a sudden we should double the size of the stadium. It should be sustainable. But if we can use that injection to increase the size of the stadium, grow the fan base. It all contributes to the club become, in a weird way, it contributes to the club being able to better sustain itself in through that approach. I don't know if that was a equally worthy
James,
answer.
James, that answers one part of the question, but the whole thing is, now I'll come back to you in a minute because I know that your concern is less that. It's more about protection around 75. But one thing that people do say is about kicking the can down the road. So the whole thing is, you know, which once we've sold down to 50 plus one, it's gone, is the big thing. But if you're saying potentially we get capital investment in, which can increase the capacity of the ground, or we can, you know, get better other sort of facilities, that's great. Is that what you're saying? Because I think most people worry that, you know, if we do this and we start investing in the playing squad, for instance, then that is gone. But are you talking about any money that comes in is sort of like investment money?
That's what I would like to see. And that's, I think, what I envisage when I say the right investment. But we also, you have to be realistic on what investors are willing to put in. But I would want to see stuff that means we can invest in longer term sustainability, like I say, capacity of the stadium, training facilities, that kind of thing that actually either enhances revenues or reduces costs in different ways.
So I want to come back on this, because actually this is a bit where I've wavered on my 75% hard bit, because I think when Angst was on before and was quite clear about that, that was something that was actually fundamentally important to me. And one of the reasons I'll cite on that is the Wrexham example. And I'm not a massive fan of what Wrexham have done, but where they have spent a lot of their money is on the infrastructure, which has made them more longer term sustainable about what they put in. They put in some money into backroom staff, they put money into stadium, training facilities and so on. And that means that when the bubble bursts at Wrexham at some point, when it does, they've got a structure in place that means it's going to reach a level that was much higher than where they were originally, because they've invested correctly. So that's where I can see, and that's my study and my look and my analysis and fair games analysis of looking at it, that if you're going to invest, you need to invest in long-term sustainable projects, which is where I felt a bit reassurance. So that for me is a good thing. I do still want to make sure that there is a kind of cast iron guarantee that says that we remain majority fan owned. That's always where I'm going to be. The reason why I worry about going below 75% is because of the business laws about where you, things that start coming into play when you've got a majority stakeholder that's at 25%. Now, the question I've got is, and I think we've talked about in the pod previously, is that, and if an investor came in now, and you're going to have to correct me, but I think they can get 23.6% or something. I think Matt's talked about me with this. It's the maximum they can get. Is there going to be a guarantee that they could not therefore start collecting other shares? Because my concern would be a bit like you start then getting somebody who goes, oh, buy that share from this person, that share from that person. You know, if Nick Robertson suddenly said, right, I'm going to flog my shares to somebody else, and then you start then getting somebody who goes above that 25% threshold, that's a bit of my concern. So I think if there's a guarantee that they can't go by that 25%, even though they obviously can all gang up, I get a bit worried.
Well, the problem with making a guarantee like that is you potentially lower the valuation for the shares that you're selling by making those kinds of commitments. So that's difficult.
But we're right, Angus, that an individual would only be able to hold in the new constitution a maximum of 25%.
No.
Apart from the fans.
The maximum available now, share wise, is 23.6%.
Right, at the moment, it's quite difficult because there's only 23.6% available. But we're proposing to have to remove the idea that we block people from owning more than 15%. Of the shares, which is a current restriction in our rules, in the PLC's articles, but that's quite a difficult restriction to enforce anyway. So you've got, you know, imagine fictitious husband and wife each have 15%. Well, they've suddenly got 30% between them. It's
which
very
actually
difficult
has
to.
happened at clubs in the league, by the way.
Yeah, it's very difficult to. The rules there, but it doesn't really help very much, I don't think. So, but getting rid of it helps us a lot because it increases the potential value of what we have left to sell, because that's what our investors, the people who we've spoken to so far, have told us. They've told us that that's
Yeah.
an issue.
So, Angus, can you explain how it increases the values? So, technically, if we pass all these things, someone could buy, could figure out a way to, if people were selling, to buy 49% of shares. Is that correct?
In theory, if they could buy the remainder apart from the 50.01, in
Yeah.
practice that's impossible, right? But in theory,
Yeah.
yes.
And so, what makes.
In practice, that's not possible.
Yeah. Go on.
The reason why it affects the value, and I'm not, first of all, I'm not a finance guy, so we should check this with our treasurer, Michelle. But it's because our minority investor needs to see a return on their investment. They need to be able to take value out of their investment over time. That might be quite a long time, depending on the investor that you talk to. And the way that they intend to do that is by getting that return out of the shares that they have bought. And therefore, the more shares that they have, the bigger that return might be, depending on how large their plans are. Now, we want to do everything we can to make sure that when and if we are able to do this investment, we maximize the amount of money that we get for the available shares that we have to sell. And to not do that would be a dereliction of our duties as board members, right? For one thing. So we must try to do that, but we also have to understand that there has to be something in it for the minority investor too. They love some of them, the people that we've talked to that have got further along with us. They love the story. They love what we do. They see the opportunity, as I said to you last time. They like the location. They like the name. They like the story. They like everything about the way that we are governed and run as a football club. But that isn't the same as having a financial person make a plan that looks like it works for these folks, and they do this all the time. So remember, there's some enormous percentage, a huge number. I don't have the exact number, so I'm not going to try and guess what it is, of football clubs in the EFL who are looking for investors right now. So we're not the only game in town. People are talking to the majority of clubs in the league, and that's because every club is losing money, pretty much. And the
Yeah.
average loss, as we've said before, is over £5 million a year. And so in that environment, everyone needs a story like ours, and everyone needs the ability to be able to derive the most value for the shareholdings that they have available to sell. We're no exception to that. We think our story's better because of who we are and the values that we represent, and our journey towards sustainability, and our regulator readiness, and our commitment to the community, and all the other things that make us special. But they only take you part of the way on the journey. Sorry, long
Yeah.
answer.
No, and I guess I have a couple of just two follow-up questions, because I think we've talked about this before, and Niall's always hinted this, which is the thing that makes us nervous, is what control do we have over who they might sell on to? So if someone has 25, 30% of the shares in the club, and they come in and they're quite philanthropic, what happens when they want to sell their shares?
That depends on the nature of any final written agreement that we have. So, but in theory, not very much. So it's important that we make sure that we have the right controls in place for the powers that we retain, and the ability to stay the majority owner. So, because.
Matt, on this is where the powers of the regulator have to come into play a lot, and potential articles of association. So with the powers of the regulator, certain things are likely to be protected. So like, the name, the badge, colours, all of that comes into play, right? So we can't, we would have to have, the fans would have to be consulted on the badge or change of colours. The FA have to be consulted, have to consult with the club if we were to change the name. All those sort of things are protected. The location of the ground is one that's not clear in the regulation, but should be able to be made more clear. So there's a lot of that that needs to come in that will help secure it. The other way, and I don't know what the situation is with our Articles of Association, but a lot of clubs have now written in to the Articles of Association, which therefore make it very difficult to change a whole load of other things. So clubs like Bristol City and Brentford having their Articles, and Luton Town having their Articles of Association, a whole load of fan-related stuff that if we put in, which could include the pitch, right? So you could say, right, well, you can't leave the ground, or the ground has to be connected to Wimbledon at all times. So those sort of things can be written in. I'm not sure what they have. I suspect they may well have done. I don't know, James, as the constitutional expert, who's obviously can quote page 73, paragraph 2, subsection 6 of all of it, there might already be there. But that's the way that some supporters groups and clubs have been moving, which kind of does adhere to some of the regulators' aims, but goes beyond that. And I think as a club, we could potentially go beyond that. I think exploring the ways of protecting the ground would be really key. That for me are some things that we can step. I still have an allergic reaction about anything that goes below 75%. And that's totally because, as we talked about in this podcast, I suffer PTSD after what happened with... Oh, I can't believe... Sorry, I mentioned the word. Sorry, guys. That's worse than mentioning the C word.
Wow.
You might have to edit that out, Adam. Jeez, that was awful. I can't forgive myself. And I know there's a number of ex-board members that I know that we always said we would never mention it, and I just thought I've betrayed them all. Sorry, everybody, every Wimbledon fan out there.
I think, Adam, Mark, I'll come to you guys next, but just one other little question that I had was, in terms of investors, do you think it would be a case of that they might put, you know, anyone you talk to might be interested in putting in money, you know, on a more regular basis? Because obviously, you know, once we sell the shares, they're gone. But we know that owners of clubs, which we are, you know, to survive in League One, people are putting in £6 million a year. That's how much we are behind. So, you know, do you think that there might be people that possibly we're talking to who might be interested in, you know, ongoing investment, if you like?
Yeah, very much so. Look, when we talk about working capital, that's really what we mean.
Yeah.
We really mean in it for the long term, and providing the ability for us to get, you know, success on the pitch that reflects our, you know, our capability and takes us on the journey that the investor wants to take us on with them. To back to your point, Niall, on the protections, you know, that's why we're structured the way we are now at the Community Benefit Society. So that has been one of the strongest ways of protecting the stadium and what have you. And it continues to be a solid factor in our decision making. And we're talking about how we might beef that up a little bit. But we're not focusing on that right now. We're focusing on this 50.01 discussion as an imperative that we must get past over the next month or so, and we'll come back to long term planning for structures that can help us to protect the things that are important to us to protect in the coming months. We will do that.
Adam, Mark, I don't know if you have any questions particularly.
I mean,
I've got loads.
I've got a specific one, Niall and I have talked about this a lot, that we still don't feel that the Wimbledon story is told well enough, and the storytelling around the club is not strong as it should be and could be. So I guess my question here is that part, you know, what I would like to see as part of this investment is an investment in proper marketing and comms around that specific stuff of our story that I feel that we still aren't doing well enough. So again, I wonder if that's been any part of the conversation, because I don't think people know enough about us.
Yeah, I mean, everyone we talk to has a basket of expertise that they want to bring along to us. And, you know, whether that is real estate or communications and marketing or statistical information or whatever it might be, there's all sorts of different expertise sets out there. And they, when they pitch to us, that's what they're pitching. They're pitching, this is why we can make it different to what you can do on your own, because we can add this piece of special sauce, which makes it possible for us to achieve a return on investment for ourselves and also to take the club forward the way that you want to take it forward. So, yeah,
I'll go back, Angus. Got to interrupt here about that, when you were just finishing there. For me, there are, I do think we're a unique club, because I think you do look at a ground and, you know, there are a quite significant proportion of that ground are people who want to do something for the club, because that's where we are. We've kind of got it within our DNA. I go back, and it won't surprise Matt and Mark. And
oh, you're not going to mention the volunteer manager again, are you? I knew you were.
Yes.
Dear listener, you can listen back on this.
Matt, you criticise it, but like, is it something that makes sense though, Matt? I mean, really, that's the point. Yeah, say what you like, but it should be a no-brainer. It should be a complete no-brainer. It's a small investment that will help utilise all the skill sets that we're talking about. I think for a club with our ethos, it's just a very small investment that will deliver 10, 15 times. And so, Matt, are there many times where I'm happy for you to kind of jest or mock me and stuff like that? And that's fine, because, of course, we always do that on this podcast. It's great. It's fine. This is one where I just think it's the time for it has come. It was due probably many years ago.
Hey, I had written volunteer manager on my bit of paper as well, so I was prepared to talk about it.
Good work, good work, Adam.
No, I agree. Me and Niall agree on these points.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess, Angus, the big thing is, listen, Niall, you know I agree with you on this. The whole idea of having a volunteer manager, someone, and we're not just talking about someone who manages the volunteers on the day, like the stewards and stuff like that. We're talking about someone who would go and identify legal people or someone who does marketing or that sort of thing who would like to be involved with the club. So it's identifying the skills within our fan base that we can call to should the need arise, or even to sort of put other things in place, I guess, is the thing. Angus and James, it's a difficult question to answer.
We have a good bit of that going on already. You'll know the Meet the Club board thing. I put out a call for volunteers and I got over a dozen people, I think, who made contact, who have skills, and we need to activate to help us with various matters, not just the 50.01 thing. They have other skills as well, as lawyers and property people and marketing people, all sorts of stuff that has come out of that. So that's good. I hear you about hiring a specific role. I do. I'd just say it's complicated. There's a giant hopper of projects that we need to prioritize and try and do, and that's one of them. So I'm not saying no by any means, but I don't have anything to add right now at the moment about it.
I do kind of go with this, because I just think I know the amount of effort, and Mark does as well, and time that goes into being on the DTV, and you have our utmost respect for that. And that's probably another reason why I always do talk about the volunteer manager, because I just think having somebody who's in place to do that takes that management of those off your hands. And it is a skilled professional role that actually needs to come into place that I think can make a huge, huge difference. I'm going to yield to Mark, because I jumped in, Mark, and your hand was up. So, Mark, go for it.
Don't worry, my point wasn't about that particular thing, and I don't want to give the DTB in this respect a free pass, but if I was to give them a wish list of 10 things I'd like them to do, that probably wouldn't right now be on there. What I was actually going to say, and I would probably do partially Mia right now, Niall, not at all, not ever, right now.
Our listener can't see, I can't see Niall going absolutely mad.
Yeah, Niall shaking his head vigorously. What I was actually going to say, and I would probably go mea culpa slightly on this one as well, is to promote the 50+1, and it seems very straightforward and clear from all messages and information that I've seen and read that 50+1 is the direction that the DTB would like the club to take. But actually, I don't feel that last time this came around, and I was on the ball at the time, which is why I mean what I mean about the mea culpa thing. I don't think last time this came around, we necessarily, as a board and a club, promoted and made it as visible and clear and concise and not stark. We don't have to put the stark stuff out there, so to speak, but actually made it very straightforward and simple for everybody, whoever they are, whatever engagement they have, to actually understand things. So I was just going to ask how at games, I know we have the meetings and the meetings are great, but the meetings at whatever time or whatever circumstance may or may not work for certain people. So how else can we, and potentially there are three podcasts, obviously, well, there are a lot of podcasts, but there are three particular podcasts and we're one of them. How could we, or how could anybody else as a fan assist the DTB and the club in terms of getting visibility and noise and information and details out there so that as many fans as possible, however long-term a fan they are and however engaged they are, whether or not they're just a first-time season ticket holder because we got promoted out of League Two, however, whoever the fans are, what can be done to make sure that they are as clued up and informed and educated as possible about why we need to make this vote happen? Would
I think
be
on
my
that,
very long-winded question, sorry.
how can we increase the engagement? So I think if I look at what I've witnessed since I got involved, obviously I wasn't around at the time of the previous vote, but I think we have to find a way to engage the younger members of the Dons Trust. It's an age-old problem how you get younger members to, they don't come to meetings, but they are part of that vote. And if they don't vote, we won't, or potentially won't meet those thresholds that are required for these votes. So my focus is on how do we engage younger members and make sure that they understand what we're asking them to vote on and why we as a DTB feel it's important that they do so. I'm under no illusion. There are two votes here, right? There's 50 plus one on the Constitution. I'm under no illusions that the Constitution is not the glamorous part or necessarily going to be the main focus of the debate over the next few weeks. But the reason it is being put forward is because it's meant to set the organisation up to have a document that lasts 20, 30 years into the future, not one that is 20 years out of date or even
Correct.
more. So how we engage and energize younger people to get excited about both votes, well, that 50 plus one is the one that will receive the debate. But it's also make people need to understand the Constitution is there because it sets how we're run. Niall has referred to it. It will underpin future discussions, if the vote passes, around what those investments would look like. So for me, the ask would be if people say, well, what is all this 50 plus one? I don't understand it. I'm not going to vote. We have a job to make sure the comms make it really clear what we're asking people to vote for and why. If you were to say, what can we as members do? If that question comes up, answer it. Or go to the DTB website, or oh, it was in the newsletter, or we will have things on social media. We are absolutely attacking the comms plan. There are people on the DTB who are a lot more experienced at comms than I am and can speak to it in more detail, but that will be the trick that hopefully gets this over the line. It's getting
Thanks, James.
people
And
engaging.
can I ask just a clarifying question on the amount of people that we need to vote? So obviously we've got lots of DTB members because season ticket holders are now DTB members holders. What percentage of DTB members have to vote for the vote to be li legal, if you like? And then how many of us have to vote pass it?
So there's the two votes. The first vote is half of the membership have to vote, 75% of them in favour. And the number of votes cast in favour has to represent at least 40% of the membership. So that's the first vote. Then the second vote is two thirds have to vote in favour, and it needs to represent 50% of people who can vote. So the second vote has a slightly lower threshold. The first one, I boil it down to it's 50% have to vote, 75% in favour. Second vote, 50%, two thirds in favour.
Okay,
That in itself, we are aware, is a huge challenge. And that's why we have a responsibility to engage people, energize them, and get them voting on this matter. No one wants a situation where 73% vote in favor, but only 49% vote. Well, where does that leave us? 73% of people that vote want it, but actually only 48% of people
people.
got energized and wanted to vote on it. And now we have, as you said, we've added the season ticket holders. I think the current membership number is around the 7,500. So we need 3,750 people just to vote. Then we've got to hit the 75% in favor. We know that's a huge challenge, and we absolutely have a plan to do everything we can
And
to hit.
yeah, and so here's the other thing is by the time that you because the vote's going to be in about a month's time, isn't it? Does it start in like the 23rd of March? Am I right? The
That
week beginning of 23rd of
that's the
March?
meeting. So voting
Yeah.
opens in advance of that. So meeting
Right.
one is 23rd of March.
Okay. Do you think, would you have a preferred bidder in place by that time? Or is that preferred bidder going to happen after that meeting? I just say, you know, there are names that have been thrown around, as you full well know, because it's been all over the press. So if there's preferred bidders in place and people get excited by that, that might increase the people number of people that vote. I wonder if that's a question for you, Angus.
Matt, hold on, mate. Matt, hold on. That's a question they really shouldn't be able to answer, to be honest. I don't know whether you can, but I would imagine that's like
There might be a preferred bidder in place by that time.
if it was possible that we knew and were able to tell that. I don't know. I'll leave it to the board. I kind of,
Yeah.
whatever.
I mean, I don't think we will be in a position to talk in any more detail about the minority investors until after the vote. I just don't see that as happening, feasible.
Yeah,
That's exactly what I would have thought, Matt. If, however, we were to speculate and make kind of suggestions that might increase turnout, that would just be us being kind of rumor mongering, which would be wrong to mention it. But if I
I know from listening carefully to you that you don't engage in all of that, so that's all good.
We put that. No, I mean, but this is an interesting point, Angus, on all the rumors, which I'm trying not
That's
to
true.
go backwards and
Should we do a
forwards on.
quick
But I
question,
think the
Matt?
thing
Just can we
on
do
the
a quick
rumors
question, Matt?
does
Quick
it
question.
hurt? Does it hurt in terms of investment when you're hearing some of the rumors that were going around before? Does that sort of stuff hurt? Not I'm not talking about potential investors. I'm
Matt,
talking about other
you're
stuff.
asking us to speculate. Matt, you can't ask him that question.
I don't.
However,
Well, you can
just on a
ask it, but
complete,
I can say I don't. I can
completely
say I don't know.
unrelated question, Matt. Which Wimbledon player was your favourite one to score a goal in a World Cup final? Totally unrelated.
Not totally unrelated at all, you
Totally unrelated
mischief
question.
monger.
Or who would you say was the greatest ever Wimbledon player of all time? Unrelated. Just I don't know how I've got that kind of connection question coming in. Anyway, seriously.
What I can say is that I felt on Saturday that all of the conversations around the ground were before the game and indeed afterwards in the 1889 were about 50.01. So that's good because we only really started with the Meet the Club board was a taster, and then we put a newsletter out on Friday last week. I think it was Friday, and that had the timetable in it. And our outbound comms hasn't actually really kicked in. That's just a newsletter with the dates in, and we're doing this. No detail behind it really, apart from here we come. So there's a ton of opportunity for us, to James's point, to engage with the entire membership. And we learnt a lot last time about how to do that better. We had a good drains up report after the last campaign on we recognized the things that didn't go well in that campaign, and some of the things that we did that were good actually, and some of the, you know, we took a lot of learning points from that work that we did before. And I alluded to this at the Meet the Club board meeting. It kind of had to do that to get to here. So we're not approaching this cold. We've been around this house before, but it's more pressing now because that was a year ago. And so we need to get on. And some of what you'll see from us, I think, will be there is more urgency now than there was a year ago. And you'll see that in coming weeks as we start to get people engaged in the process and getting people engaged in to vote. And we're also, you know, activating all the aspects everything that's available to us. You might have seen we launched a WhatsApp community last week. That's new for us. That's a definite nod towards attracting a different demographic from the other channels that we operate on. And you know, you'll see more innovations like that and more activity from us across all of our channels.
And that's just, I was going to say, tying in with that, I was going to say, Instagram, like I say, I talk about trying to engage certain demographics. That is a really critical way to engage certain demographics. So hopefully people have seen an uptick in our activity there as well. And if they're not already following us, please do, because we will be all over this through, like Angus says, all of the channels available to us over the coming weeks.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I was going to mention the WhatsApp group because I kind of, you know, we obviously have been, we've been using Discord. I don't want to say testing. I know there's been discussions about that, but obviously that didn't bring in any younger fans. I'm on there and I don't really see anyone that I think is younger. I'm on quite a few WhatsApp groups, and I guess something that I don't see many young people on WhatsApp. Like my youngest daughter isn't on WhatsApp. In fact, a lot of them are not on their phones a lot of the time these days, it seems. But I was going to say about Instagram. Obviously, TikTok is the big one for sure, and all those stories across all those platforms are the kind of big pieces. So that's
and you're talking on a podcast. There are at least two other podcasts and the official AFC Women podcast. And not for us to tell you guys what to do, but I think, you know, being able to reach out and access whatever type of different audiences there are would be a good call, right?
We'll definitely be doing that. But, you know, obviously this is your podcast that we're on today, so we're happy to be here.
I think we're grateful you are. And I think it's great that you'd reach out to other podcasts, but remember that you were with us first, and you know, this is home. It's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, that's right. I like I told John Scales when I saw him at the meeting recently that he actually came on Same Old Wombles last year before he went on the official AFC Women one.
I know. So we're platforming for you guys. I guess to take it in a slightly different direction, but equally something which is got the fans going a bit. I think we talked recently. It's that the Northampton game is coming up, and obviously this has been a bone of contention. I didn't know if there's been any further thoughts about plans in terms of what might happen. If there's been any letters, anything else we can do, because you know people are still quite angry about the fact that it's, you know, our worldwide celebration weekend, and it's great that we've got the Meet the Manager and Leon Hardson on the Saturday. But, you know, the game's now switched to 12 o'clock on the Sunday, which is going to be very difficult. I understand it's going to be very difficult for the Northampton fans to get to. So I didn't know if there had been any further discussions at DTB level about that particular game.
We talked about it, obviously. And the club has said what's happened on the club website. There's nothing else that we can add to that. It's a function of the league that we're in and the arrangements we have with the broadcasters. So there's not a lot, if anything, to be gained from raising it any further or trying to react in another way. I'm choosing my words really carefully, obviously, but
So can I ask a, can I ask a follow on with that, just to maybe push down the road a bit? So you, as a Don's Trust board, obviously you represent the fans, the owners, us, and we think we should as a fan owned club, this is what I think. I mean, others can jump in and say otherwise, that we need to tell Sky this is not on. And the way to do that is for something to happen at the game that is visible to Sky. And you don't have to answer this, but I would probably want to say, Don's Trust Board, I would like you to get behind that kind of idea for us, because I think I don't think it would be damaging to our relationship necessarily. I guess maybe Sky would say, well, we're not going to put an extra game on. That might dent our revenue in the future, but that would be a bit strange of them. But,
so I think I've got to pick my words carefully. I think we've already done that. We've already made our representations about it. And the way to resolve these kinds of issues is not to have a sort of public discussion about it, but to work hard with the professionals that we work with in the club and at the organizations that are our main stakeholders towards figuring out ways to work effectively together in the future. We can't change what's happened, and it would be counterproductive to do anything else other than to do that, have those conversations quietly and privately with those stakeholders, with a view to understanding each other well and coming to a good adult collegiate decision about how we do things going forward. And the difficulty with doing anything else is it would just cause an escalation and consequences. So I would strongly recommend that we don't make a scene at the game, for example. Or I think last week you were contemplating going to Millbank and wearing blue and yellow and what have you. I just think that would be
counterproductive
is the word I'm going to use, but it's stronger than that. It would be damaging. So you have to take account of the fact that we're a grown-up football team in a national league at a very high level with a bunch of professional organizations with billions of pounds resting on all of this. So we have to behave like that.
Yes, I get Angus, I completely understand, but we're all a little bit angry.
I'm not trying to be patronizing, if that's what you think. I'm absolutely not. I understand the strength of feeling. I do.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to explain to you the reality of of the consequences that there would be.
It's just so annoying.
No, I think that's a good explanation. I mean, you keep winning me over on stuff, Angus. So fine, I won't turn up with a protest T-shirt on saying I hate Sky.
That's my job, I suppose. But thank you. I'm glad that I am able to put it across without it becoming, difficult. It's really difficult sometimes, and something I've learned. You know, you were asking James about his experience of being on the board. Something I've learned over the last couple of years is just how complicated this all is, and just how much work goes on that you guys won't see. People don't see it in relationship building with the powers that be, whether that's the broadcaster or the organizers of the league or the organizers of the cups or whoever it is, you know, and however that all works, and with our fellow clubs in the league that we have to have a professional relationship with too, to be able to navigate all of that. It's just a massive amount of work. And it would be, like I say, counterproductive to chuck a spanner at it.
I think one thing that stood out for me on the situation when we talked about it was, if we can put a positive spin on it, is it showed the it kind of brought the Wimbledon spirit to life, when we were talking about it at the board, we were saying that that the fans who are travelling, they're all kind of clubbing together, working out. It wasn't a, oh, I can't go to the game now, it's on a Sunday. It's how can we cooperate and collaborate together to make sure that those of us that need to get to an airport for a certain time, how can we make that happen so we can still get to the game? It's like we've said, the situation is what it is. We can't change it, but it brought out that Wimbledon spirit that nothing is can't be overcome.
I think James, that is brilliant. And I would recommend, and I wouldn't be the only voice in saying this, I would recommend that those are stories that go out through the club website. So if there are stories out there that saying someone has had to find to do another flight or change this around, then saying how we as the club have come together to make that happen, I would strongly recommend that is a super story that could be put out there, because that's not saying anything against Sky. It's saying this is the problem, and this is because we're a community club, have come together and solved it. I think that is a beautiful story to be telling, because if those are things that have happened, we need to get that out there and promote that, because that is the thing, that's the essence of it. We're a fan-owned community club. And if we can sell those stories, that's a wonderful thing. Chaps, I'm realizing that we've taken up so much of your time and you've got a very short time before your meeting starts. I think it'll be great, obviously, Angus and James, we'll get you back on at other times. And, certainly when it comes around to the 50 thing. But I think the clear thing to take away from this, if you want to win Niall over, apple crumble at the club and get the volunteer manager in, and then you are sorted. It
Hey,
has
can I
been.
mention one? I know
Yes.
we've got to go. Can I mention one thing before we finish? Because just so you know, obviously, We Are Wimbledon Fund has been raising money for the club, which has been great. That was really cool. There's a pub quiz two is now coming. So it's back at the Alex and it will be on March the 22nd. You have to have four people maximum per team. So we're making sure that the Don's Trust board don't have like 20 players again or whatever they had last time to win.
Oh, did you
Fair
get
enough.
there?
We did.
No,
We
I'm gonna have to
did.
nibble there. I'm gonna have to nibble. We bought tickets for eight people. Couple of the team or couple of the group were unable to make it. We played as two teams of three. We that You've got to realize how
And
competitive it gets
oh
between
wow.
board
And
members. Can't
and
believe we.
we came first and second, and we will be returning to defend our
Oh,
positions.
brilliant.
It was a
Yeah,
great
so you can get the
evening, but I
tickets
had to
now.
nibble there. I had to nibble
Yeah,
there.
it's fine. Yeah, so you can get the tickets now. If you go to the wearewimbledonfund.com, it should be obvious where to click to get a ticket. So if you need to get a ticket, get one. I can't be there, unfortunately. I don't think I can be there. So I won't be sad when we lose again for any of us who do
Matt,
make
how are we
it
going to be the
there.
DGB this time then?
Well, it's quite simple. I mean, I think that we have to sit between them, because they're sharing answers,
Because
because they
one
all
of our
sat together.
former
They all sat together.
I'm
So I think
far
we have
too
to just sit.
competitive to risk
They
sharing answers with an opposition
sat
team, even
next to
if
each
they sat
other.
next to me. I'm
Do you
far
know what I
too
mean? I think
competitive for that,
there was a
I can tell
thing,
you now.
but I don't want to accuse the DTB of anything. Anyhow, guys, thank you so much for being on. I've got to let everyone go now. Thank you to my friend Al Cooper. There was a typical brotherly love in this episode. Thanks to Dr. Adam Proctor. A big thanks to Mark Lewis. I've remembered you.
Thank you,
And
Matt. Always a
to our
pleasure.
incredible special guests, James Ledwood and Angus Fox. Enjoy the board meeting this evening. I hope this has, stimulated yourselves and not drained your brains. We will
Given me
look
some
forward
good
to.
things to talk about, to be honest. So it's actually very good timing. And thank you for having me. I've really enjoyed it and hope to be back in the future.
An absolute pleasure. Anyhow, thanks again, guys. I'm Matt Cooper. We're the Same Old Wombles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth. If